You missed me when I was flunking out of college. You didn't know me. You didn't know me when I had a severe stuttering problem. You didn't know me when I could not talk outside of my house. You didn't know that when I went to the store, I couldn't say it. When I went to school, I couldn't talk. You didn't know I was teased beyond belief because of this severe stuttering problem until I was 15. You missed me when I flunked out of college. You missed me when I was homeless and I lived in a car for 3 years. You missed all of that.
I was born in Miami, Florida, in an area called Liberty City, in an abandoned building on a hard linoleum floor with my twin brother.
So you turn your TV on now, you see me, you see, man, this dude is, look at him, he's balling, he out of control, he got TV shows, he got money, look at him, he living, oh man, but you missed me when I was getting here.
My mother got pregnant with me at 15 years old. I grew up on the east side of Atlanta in a neighborhood by the name of Kirkwood. Drugs, gangs, violence, you name it. And I came up in a two-bedroom home, 14 people.
We were 6 weeks of age, we were adopted. When I was in fifth grade, I was identified as EMR, labeled educable, mentally retarded, put back from the fifth grade into the fourth grade, and stayed in that category until I got out of high school. I don't have any college training.
And I used to sleep on the floor. My grandmother, Miss Daisy Johnson, she used to come to us and she would say, one night out of the week, you all get the opportunity to sleep in the bed. There was five more of my cousins in the bed, and so we slept three to the foot and three at the head.
It was hard when just over 3 years ago, in the Penobscot building in Detroit, Michigan, where I was operating my business, and I fell on some hard times, and I was sleeping in my office. And it was hard coming through the lobby. And sometimes they would laugh, there's a guy talking about becoming successful. And look at him, he's bathing in the bathroom upstairs on the 21st floor. He sleeps on the floor. It was hard, ladies and gentlemen, coming to speak to people. And I was facing financial difficulties in my own life. I was behind on my bills and my dreams, and I'm saying to them, you can live your dream. It was hard, ladies and gentlemen. It was very difficult to pick myself up each day believing that I could do it. There were times that I doubted myself.
And so as a kid, pretty quick, I had to make a decision of what I wanted to do with my life, because in that same house, I had eight uncles, all eight of which are still going in and out of prison till this day because they sold drugs and they were in gangs. And so I saw them selling drugs, but I also saw the outcome. And so I said, I'm not selling drugs. I'm not joining a gang because I see where that road leads to. Either I'm going to end up dead or in prison. I said, so my best bet may be to go to the NFL.
I said, God, why is this happening to me? I'm just trying to take care of my children and my mother. I'm not trying to steal or rob from anybody. Why did this have to happen to me? It was very hard. And here's what I want to say to you. For those of you that have experienced some hardships, don't give up on your dream. No one could have convinced me by holding on, by continuing to push forward, by continuing to run toward my dream, that one day I would have my own talk show. It's a long shot, ladies and gentlemen, from Liberty City, an abandoned building on a floor, never knowing my mother or father. It's a long shot being here with you today in this dome in Atlanta. It's a long shot. No college training, labeled educable, mentally retarded, but I kept running toward my dream.
I want to go to the NFL. I feel our family deserves a better way of life. Let's work for it. So every night we would go out and we would race light pole to light pole in Kirkwood. No shoes. Light pole to light pole every night. You see, most nights after practice, everybody would leave to go home. And I always had to sit in the park because my mother worked at Wendy's. And my mother didn't get off work till about 10 o'clock, 10:30 most nights. And I'll be sitting there in the park, and I loved it. I didn't want anybody to take me home, because when I went home, I was sleeping on the floor with roaches and rats. And so anytime I got in solitude to dream, anytime I got in solitude to think about what I wanted to do for my family and my community, I took advantage of it. And so most nights, I'll be sitting there in the park, and I'll be looking up at the lights. And I'll be envisioning myself doing things in the NFL, envisioning myself doing things for my community. And just as the lights would always go out, my mother, she would pull up, and she used to drive an old Buick Regal. Hubcaps off the car, seats torn up, the car was all beat up. And she would pull up and she would put the car in park. And I would always hop up, I would run over to my mother, I would give her a hug and a kiss. And I would say, "Mom, if you don't mind, can you please sit back in your car? I have to do some extra drills. I have to go to the NFL." She would never have to work another day in your life. And I knew she was tired. And every night my mother would say, "Sure, Ink," and she would sit back in that car. Those car lights would hit that field, and here you had a 7-year-old kid doing backpedaling drills, running sprints, running laps, chasing his dream to go to the NFL.
My mom, for years, from the time I was 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, I never saw a woman take so much physical abuse than the way I've seen my mother beaten every freaking day of my life. And I'm helping her, but I can't help her because I'm not strong enough. I don't have the muscle to get these men off my mother. My mother's a very high yellow woman, and every time they hit her, she would bleed from her eyes. And she would walk around for days with sunglasses on in the house. And I said, "Ma, I need a deck of cards." Last altercation we got in, my stepfather hit my mama so hard in the face. I called her and I looked at him with this rage and this pain in my eyes. Like, one day. And I took this deck of cards. And I couldn't live in the house, so I had to live in the garage. And after this last altercation we had with this guy, I ran to my garage and I grabbed this deck of cards and I flipped a 7 and I started doing 7 push-ups. I flipped a 6, I did 6. I flipped a 9, I did 9. I flipped a 2, I did 2. I flipped another 9, I did 9. Until I got all the way through the deck. Jack, Queen, King worked 10. Jack, Aces, 25s, and Jokers, 50. Until I got sick and tired of what pain felt like in my gut. It didn't even matter to me no more, because I started shuffling them all over again, and that's when I started doing my sit-ups, because I wanted to make sure sports wasn't the reason why I started training. It was to make sure man never put his hands on my mama again. That's why I started doing what I started doing. Sports was a byproduct of what people started to see. It was the behind the scenes that was driving me crazy.
My father was a very abusive, very, very abusive, okay? And I'm a big guy, and my father was a big man. And I was a kid, my earliest memory of my father was him knocking my mother out. Knocking her out. And I felt so helpless when I was a kid that I said, "I will never be that helpless, ever." So I said, "I gotta get strong."
Inky Johnson, do you even think you're going to play at the University of Tennessee? He said, "You're 135 pounds. I said, "Not only am I going to play, I'm going to start." I said, "You made a mistake." I said, "See, what you don't understand, and this is what most people do, they base judgment off of what they can see. But what they don't understand, the moments that make you who you are, the moments that they can't see. You see, anybody can be on their best behavior when somebody is standing over their shoulder, watching them, seeing if they're gonna do what they're supposed to do. But what that reporter didn't see, you see, he could see I came from Krim High School. He could see I was 135 pounds. He could see I was 5'9". He could see all of the stats. He could see all of that. But what he never saw was when I was in the park with my mother when I was 7 years old. She was sitting in that Buick Regal at 10:30 at night. What he didn't see was every Saturday morning at 5:30, I was up running 2 miles to a fire station and 2 miles back home. What he didn't see was every time I slept on that floor with ropes and racks with my cousins, I got up every morning, went to school, and never made one excuse. What he didn't see was on Christmas Eve, when a guy came through me and my cousin's window, he stuck a 9mm and a 45 in both our face and took all of our Christmas gifts, and we had to stand on the curb and our mother told us, y'all just be grateful. He didn't see that. And those were the moments that made me who I am. And so now his opinion didn't matter. His opinion would never become my reality.
It's necessary to know that everybody won't see it, that everybody won't join you, that everybody won't have the vision, that a lot of people like to complain, but they don't want to do anything about their situation, that you are an uncommon breed. You know, you have to know within yourself that I can do this. Even if no one else sees it for me, I must see it for myself.